Oh, what I need for today's shiur, let me not forget before I start, is a Rambam. If Mitch comes, he has a Rambam. If not...
This is somebody, because I don't know who you are.
Thank you, thank you.
H. Bram?
Oh, Harvey, yeah. Okay. Okay. So let's turn to Daf Chaf Aleph on the days. And we're looking at the brisa called My Chanukah. You remember that famous brisa that gives us hopefully the background and a grasp of what Chanukah is all about. David, this has sugar in it?
No, it does not.
No.
What do you want to use?
Yeah, I use the stevia which I have over there. Okay.
Is it inside the kitchen?
It's in my top drawer here. Let's see if there's anything. No, nothing left from yesterday's. Okay. Now Rashi, please note Rashi here. My Chanukah, this is about 10 lines up from the bottom of the page. Al Ezen Nes Kavuha. And you get the impression that according to Rashi, it's not clear that there may be multiple or at least two different candidates of which miracle is the basis for the kvius, the establishment of the days of Chanukah. And the Brisa opens by saying my Chanukah to tell you that the thrust of what we want to accomplish here in this Brisa is to answer the question, what was the nest? What was the nest that formed the basis for the takana of Chanukah? Okay. Now, what I'm going to try to do is the following. This is like an experiment of sorts. We spoke at great length yesterday and the day before yesterday about the name Chanukah. We offered many different interpretations, the most popular of which is Chanu Chafhei. That on the 25th day of Kislev, they rested after the success in the battlefield, the military victory. But what I'd like to do as an experiment is now, as we go through the Brisa, to try to enhance our understanding of this Brisa, and I'm going to rely on this anthology here. I'm not going to read every word that I have here. This is at the back of the Masift. It's called Yalkut Biurim. And again, he has extensive notes here on this Brisa. So we'll try to touch on some of the notes. So the first thing that he comments on is the following. It says, Bechaf Hei, Tana Rabbanan, Bechafei b'kislev yomi b'chanuka tamne inun. Starting with the 25th of Kislev, we have the days of Chanukah that are 8 in number. So the first comment that he makes is, why 8 days? Shouldn't it be 9 days? Where? In Chutz Laretz. Because in Chutz Laretz we always add an extra day to the Yontif. So the simple answer to this question is that of the Chidah, the Berki Yosef, and he says that by the time you get to the 25th day of the month, we already know exactly whether the previous month was a Chaser or a Mole. Like it took the Shluchim, the messengers from the Sanhedrin Yerushalayim, it took them, let's say, up to 14, 15 days until they would finally spread the word, but by the end of the month they already knew. But we're going to speak about another approach, and that is the Pre-Chadash's approach. Why in Chutzatz is no extra day of Chanukah, ninth day? He's apparently, again, this is just my own detective work, I don't know if I'm right, he's not satisfied with the approach to the Chidah. Because even though originally, back in the day, they were Mekadesh the Chodesh al-Pi Re'iyah, which meant that the aid and the witnesses had to come and testify in front of the Sanhedrin as to whether they saw the moon, Bechidusha, when they saw the new moon, or the, and then basically would have to set up the Chodesh. That's only true up until, but not beyond, Hillel HaShemi. When Hillel HaShemi came in, then he established a calendar, and that's called Kiddush Al Pi Cheshbon. And the Gemara establishes that we continue with Yom Tov Sheni Shel Golios even after Hillel HaShemi, meaning once the Kiddush was Al Pi Cheshbon, everybody on the face of the earth knew exactly when Rosh Chodesh was and whether the previous month was a Chas or a Moleh. And yet they continued this. In the language of the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah, that's called Hinhigu Minag Avosenu Biyadenu. And the Rambam points out that we no longer have to go back to ask ourselves the question, is there a suffix about whether today is Yontif or not? It's an absolute established rule that every Yontif in Chutzars has an extra day. So from that perspective, again, I'm just guessing as to why the Pre-Chodesh didn't accept what's the intuitive answer to this question. He would not operate within the framework of Sfeika D'Yom and say, well, the Shluchim certainly reached the far flung corners of the Golos of the diaspora by the 25th of Kislev. That wouldn't satisfy him, because if there was a minog to add an extra day, then that minog should have applied to Hanukkah as well. So he offers another approach. Let's just hear what the Pre-Chodesh has to say, because anything that I said was just my own idea. The Pre-Chodesh says that the reason why they didn't add an extra day of Hanukkah in Chutz Loretz is because Hanukkah is a mitzvah derabbanan, and the halacha of Yom Tov Sheni only applies to a Yom Tov d'oraisa, meaning to Shavuos and Sukkos and Pesach. There, with regard to a d'oraisa, even though it's a major enterprise and it's a tirchi yisera to require another day of Yom Tov, again, some people are happy about another day that they don't have to go to work, but it's still considered a tircha. So for a mitzvah d'oraisa, for regel, one of the shol shegolim, they instituted this enterprise called Yom Tov Sheni, an extra day. But in the case of Hanukkah, which is only a mitzvah d'rabbanan, lo ratzu lahatriach velasos od yom, they didn't want to be impose upon the people an extra day. Even though, again, there's no isur melacha on Hanukkah, so therefore, you know, it doesn't seem like such a great imposition, but maybe he means by an imposition the fact that, as we'll soon see, there are many Isurim that apply as a result of Hanukkah, as far as Tainus and Hesped and so forth, so that they didn't want to impose an extra day. And now even the Pre-Chodesh is not satisfied with that. He himself gives another answer, an alternative suggestion as to why they didn't add an extra day in Chutz Laretz for Hanukkah. And he says that the number 8 is a very significant number. And why is that? Because 8 are the days of Milah. This we know from Echad Miyodea, right? Shmona Niyodea, Shmona Yachay Milah, right? Yimei Milah. So he says that the Yevanim did not tolerate the mitzvah of Milah, and therefore they attacked the institution of Milah, and now HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us the undermine their evil decrees, and we have the mitzvah of Milah, and that's 8. So the number 8 is very significant. I was thinking, if you want to take this one step further, the Maharal Miprag is famous. He says this all over the place, that the number 8 means beyond Teva. Right? 7 always represents the days of creation. So the supernatural is always indicated by the number 8. So maybe since the miracle that we're about to learn about in this price, it was supernatural, therefore the number 8 is appropriate. Okay. Now I want to share with you a Chassam Sofer. And I'm sure that everyone here in this room has heard the Chassam Sofer. Maybe you just didn't know that it was the Chassam Sofer who said it. Why is it, asks the Chassam Sofer, that you will find the sugya and the halachas of Hanukkah mentioned how many times in Mishnah? How many times?
Mishnah.
Zero. It's not in the Mishnah. Why was it omitted from the Mishnah? In the case of Purim, in the case of Megillah, he said, don't tell me because Hanukkah is only Darabbanan, Megillah is also only Darabbanan, and yet we have Mishnayos that discuss the mitzvah of Kriyas HaMegillah and all the mitzvahs of Purim. We also have a Masechta, that most of the Masechta is dedicated to Purim. So why is it that we have nothing in the Mishnah with regard to Hanukkah? And by the way, when I say zero, that's not really true. There is one Mishnah that mentions Chanukah. Does anybody know where that Mishnah is? We're going to learn about it today, Mitzvah Hashem. It's in Masechet Bava Kamma. And the question is, if your Ner Chanukah damages somebody, whether you have to pay damages for that. But as far as the Mitzvah of Chanukah and all the dinim that apply to Chanukah and Ner Chanukah itself, that completely omitted from the Mishnah. So the Chassam Sofer claims the following, that Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, who authored the Mishnah, was not happy with the Chashmonaim. Shelo kidin asu, they violated the Torah. How so? Mitch, everybody knows this.
Yeah, they were kings and priests.
Correct, they took over the Malchus. They had no right to take over the Malchus because they were not from Beis David. They were Kohen. They came from a different Shevet. And the Torah says, Lo yosu Shevet mibein ragel, chokek mibein ragel, meaning that Malchus has to be explicitly given to Shevet Yehuda, and even more specific, to the descendants of David HaMelech. So David starts the entire lineage of Malchus. Anyone who tries to usurp Malchus is violating the law of Lo yosu Shevet. Me. However, Abosai, I find that it's very difficult to accept this Chassam Sofer. Listen to the Rambam in Hilchos Chanukah. The Rambam was many, many centuries before the Chassam Sofer. And the Rambam codifies this Brisa, this very Brisa, in his own beautiful language with quite a few changes. And maybe we'll talk about those. And the Rambam writes the following. This is Perek Gimel Mehilchus Megillah, because it's really Hilchus Megillah in Chanukah. He says, "Bibayis Sheni Kshemolchu Yavan Gazu Gzeros Al Yisrael." And he goes through a long list of what the Yavanim did. Maybe we'll get to that a little bit later. And then he says that Achirichem Aleim Elokei Avoseinu V'Hoshiyem Miyodam V'Hitzilam V'Gavru B'nei Chashmonai HaKohanim. The Rambam goes out of his way. He's not embarrassed by the fact that they were Kohanim Gedolim. V'Hargum V'Hoshiyam V'Hoshiyai Es Yisrael Miyodam, that these great Kohanim called the Chashmonaim were Moshias Yisrael Miyad HaYivonim. Now listen to the next line in the Rambam. V'amidu Melech Min HaKohanim. So, you know, if I would stop right here at this point, I'd put a sof pasuk here. V'amidu Melech Min HaKohanim. If I wrote a commentary on the Rambam, and that was a terrible thing to do, right? How could they set up a Melech Min HaKohanim? But listen to the next line in the Rambam. And the Rambam says, V'chazor Malchus LiYisrael. I mean, does that sound like something negative? It sounds to me that if you would ask the Rambam why Chanukah was established, the answer is because V'chazor Malchus LiYisrael. The Rambam even tells you that the independence of the Jewish nation in Israel, the sovereign independence, lasted for 2 centuries. And the Rambam tells you that that's an essential part of Chanukah. So I don't believe for one moment that, according to the Rambam, the Chashmonaim were guilty of some sort of crime by usurping the Malchus, and therefore Rebbe omitted it from the Mishnah. But I do want to mention that there are other answers to the Chassam Sofer's question as to why Chanukah doesn't appear in the Mishnah. And perhaps the most fascinating of all these answers is offered by the Chiddah. The Chiddah says that even before the Mishnah, there was something called Megillas Tainis. And we're going to see soon that Megillas Tainis is a Megillah that establishes which days in the Jewish calendar, in the Hebrew calendar, were days of miracles, and therefore they generate what's called an Iser an Isur Tainus, Isur Hespek V'Tainus. And all the laws of Hanukkah are incorporated in Megillas Tainus. Megillas Tainus predates the Mishnah. And therefore, says the Chidah, Rebbe felt that it was unnecessary to codify the laws of Hanukkah in the Mishnah. He relied on the fact that at that time in history, everybody had access to Megillas Tainus. Again, there are a lot of historical points here that have to be studied very carefully, but I just wanted to mention, just in touching, that we don't have to accept the Chasam Sofer, and the Rambam doesn't seem to accept the Chasam Sofer. Okay. Now, the next line... Yeah, go ahead.
In my view, I think the question should be on the Rambam, not on the other commentators.
Good. How come so for that, you have to come back at 11:45. Sorry. Because that's a long discussion. How did the Rambam justify the fact that the Chashmonaim took over the Malchus? And I have a beautiful shir on that topic. But for now, let's read on in the Braisa, because my goal today is to at least cover this Braisa. What is the nature of these 8 days in Halacha? And the Braisa describes them as days delo mispid behun, velo lisanos pahen. These are days that are enjoined from eulogies and from fasting. Now, Rashi goes out of his way to point out that these days are not days of Iser Malacha, but they're days of Iser Hespeg V'Tainus. So one of the questions we have to ask ourselves is why did the Rabbanon, when they established Chanukah, they only went so far, not beyond that? They created an Iser Hespeg V'Tainus, but not an Iser Malacha. And we'll soon see that there's something similar with regard to Purim. Now, a number of questions arise here. Are there any situations in which there is a permission, there is an allowance to make a hesped? So this is a machlokes in the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah on Daf Yud Ches Amud Beis. And the language of the Gemara is Batla Megillas Tainus or Lo Batla Megillas Tainus. Let me explain. In Megillas Tainus, which as I said before predates the Mishnah, there's a whole list of days, many, many days, that were days of Nisim, of miracles, during the period of Bayis Sheni. Bayis Sheni is a very complicated period of time in Jewish history. It's a very bleak period of time, very sad. And we'll discuss that if we get a chance. But yet, on the other hand, there were many signs from God that He was watching over the Jewish people even during this very dark, bleak period of time called Bayis Sheni. And the Megillas Tainus gives us a whole list of those days that we have to commemorate on the Hebrew calendar because of the Nisan that took place on those days. And one opinion in the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah is that Batla Megillas Tainus, which means that any day that was listed, enumerated in Megillas Tainus as the day of Iser Hespeg V'Tainus is completely batel. And that's why we don't know of such a thing. We don't have any vestige of a minhag that reflects the Megillas Tainus as far as Iser Hespeg V'Tainus. The only exception is Chanukah. And if you hold that batel Megillas Tainus, then with regard to Chanukah, there was a new takana of Iser Hespeg V'Tainus. In other words, Chanukah now stands on its own independent of Megillas Tainus. If you hold by the opinion and maintain that Batla Megillas Tainus, you can't say that the Iser Hespeg V'Tainus on Chanukah is a result of Megillas Tainus, because then you're going to have to extend the list to include another 20 days of Iser Hespeg V'Tainus. So we're going to assume now that Batla Megillas Tainus, but yet a brand new Iser of Hespeg V'Tainus was generated by the Chachamim, was established by the Chachamim. Oh. Perhaps this could explain the Psak of the Mechaber. The Mechaber says in Shulchan Aruch that Afal Gavdi Ein Maspidu B'Chanukah, I will be Adam Chacham if a great scholar dies, Maspidu Bo. He adds another condition. It's got to be that the Hesped takes place in front of the mess. But in any event, you see that for the sake of Kavanat Torah, the Mechaber allows Hesped. If we were operating within the framework of Megillus Tainus in all those days, it would be an absolute, with no exception, Iser Tainus. An Iser Hesped. I'm going to talk about Tainus in just a minute. What we're saying is that there are two ways of understanding an Iser Hesped. One way is to say that the day has the status of a full Yontif. You know, we're going to celebrate this day with Simcha and Mishteh, possibly even Iser Molacha, with Hallel and many different dimensions of a Yontif. And within that context is an Iser Molacha. I'm sorry. Within that context is an Iser Hesped. The other way of saying it is that no, the day itself is not invested with the status of a Yontif. The day has to be a different day. We have to commemorate this day. We have to remember the miracle. For remembering the miracle, all I need is Hallel or Al-Anisim in the case of Tefillah. I need to avoid Hesped whenever I can. But when there's some overriding need for a Hesped, a push, like for example, a Talmud Chacham dies, and that's covered at Torah, then we're going to make the exception to the rule. So again, I'm just suggesting that the reason why the Shulchan Aruch allows for flexibility in the case of the Iser Hesped on Chanukah, it's because the original Megillus Tainus, which puts the Iser Hesped into a broader context of a Yontif, that's Batel. That no longer exists. What we're dealing with now is a brand new Takana, a new independent enactment on the part of the Chachamim of Chanukah as 8 days that are special, that have to be marked, that have to be days of thanksgiving and gratitude, but it's not a hardcore, absolute Iser Hesper. And if that be the case, perhaps I could also answer the following question. With regard to Tainus, with regard to fasting, although the Ramah is not willing to make an exception on a yard site, that's called Yom Shemesvo Aviv, so it means, and for this guy, you know, it means every single year his yard site is going to be, the yard site of his father is on Hanukkah, there's no fasting. Now, you and I may not... Is anyone in this room who fasts on a yard side? No, because we're all chassidim. We make a kiddush, because we're all chassidim. But back in the day, when there were real litvaks, like my Rebbe, he fasted on a yard side. In fact, it was mind-boggling, because on a yard side, he would fast the entire day, and on that day, he would give shir from 9 in the morning till 5, non-stop, without any eating and any drinking. And he was no youngster, because at my time he was already in the upper 70s. The man was in a different spiritual plane, you know. So there are litvaks who even to this day will fast on a yard site. It's interesting, we married off our daughter on the yard site of my grandfather. My aunt refused to come to the wedding, because she had yard site for her father. And, you know, I had to rein myself in, because if I would have had liberty to say what I wanted to, I would say to my aunt, I think your father, my grandfather, would be absolutely thrilled if you would come to my daughter's wedding. You know, a yard site doesn't mean you can't go to a wedding. But there are those who take a yard site very, very seriously, with a very heavy dosage, with an Easter time. So the Ramah says, for those who fast on Yom Shemesvo Aviv, they're not allowed to fast during Chanukah. You see that the Ramah is taking this Iser Tainus very seriously.
You do a full day fast or a half day fast?
Oh, excellent. Excellent question. So now, what are the exceptions to the rule? So we'll get to your half day in just a second. So first I want to share with you the Shiboli Aleket. The Shiboli Aleket lived about 6 centuries ago. He was a Rishon. And he writes that if you have a bad dream and you want to fast on Chanukah, now I hope none of us here will have a bad dream, but we're talking about a really terrible dream. And sometimes a dream could be so real that you wake up the next day and you want to fast because you think that there's a gzeirah in a shemayim and you want to somehow nullify that gzeirah by fasting. That's called a tainus chalom. So the Shiboli Aleket says that a tainus chalom is mutter during Chanukah. That's exception number one. Exception number two is what's called a tainus tzibur. Now, to really understand what a Tainus Tzibur is, you have to learn an entire Masechta in Shas, which is called Masechta Tainus. But suffice it to say that if there was a drought and there wasn't rain, then the Chachamim would decree an entire series of fast days. Like, let's say, for example, they would say that every 7 days we fast, or every Monday and Thursday we're going to fast. That's called a Tainus Tzibur. Now, what happens if when they made that decree, you know, based on the calendar, it overlapped on Hanukkah. So the Poskim writes, this is all based on a Tosfos in Masechta Tainis, that if they were Makabel the Tainis at some period in the calendar before Hanukkah, and now they fasted, and now the next day of fasting, and the third day, whatever it is, comes out on Hanukkah, then they're allowed to fast. So that's a second exception to the rule as far as fasting on Hanukkah. And the third exception to the rule is that according to some poskim, if you stop fasting before nightfall, then that's considered a fast, but it doesn't violate, as far as Chana is concerned, the Isur Tainis. What am I trying to show to you, Rav Osai? The upshot of my whole discussion is that this is not a hardcore Isur Tainis, with the exceptions that we said, we don't know about a yard site. The Ramah says you're not allowed to fast on a yard site. The Shiboli Aleket allows you to fast on Hanukkah in the case of a Tainis Chalom. We had flexibility in the case of a Tainis Tzibur. We had some allowance in the case of eating before what we call Samachli Erev, before the day ends, and that's called the fast day, but yet it's allowed. And the answer in my mind is that because Batla Megillah's Tainis, that the hardcore Iser Hespik V'Tainis, which is codified by Megillah's Tainis, was never accepted Lahalach. It may have been accepted during a certain period of time, but it didn't last. And therefore, Hanukkah was a new enactment of an Iser Hespik V'Tainis. By the way, when we get to Megillah, Mirtz Hashem, which I hope to get to in about 2 or 3 weeks, remind me that I'm going to ask you the following question. How many days of Purim does any individual Jew have? Is it one or is it two? What would be your intuitive response?
One.
It should be one, right? Either you belong to the Prazim, which are the open cities, and you celebrate Purim on the 14th, or you belong to the Krachim, the largest cities that were walled at the time of Yeshua, like Yerushalayim, and you celebrate Purim on the 15th.
Well, you get a home in both places.
Say again?
You get a home in both places.
Good, that's an interesting Shiloh. That's a Mishnah later on in Megillah. But let's say I live in one of those two areas. So you and I would have said that you have one day of Purim. But in Shulchan Aruch it says that there's an Iser Hespik V'Tainis on both days. And it's all based on the Rambam. And if you look in the Rambam carefully, he seems to assume that the Iser Hespik V'Tainis on Purim on both days applies to everyone. So even though I commemorate Purim on the 15th, there's going to be an Iser Tainis and Hespik on the 14th. So that means that Purim is really an entity that's comprised of 2 days. So remind me to talk about this if I forget, because the Isur Hespik V'Tainis is a very fine barometer for analyzing the status.
How could you ever have a Tainis on the 14th?
Meaning you can't go 2 days straight, do you mean?
Yeah.
Well, you would eat maybe in between, because again, we haven't gotten to another discussion, which is a very heavy discussion. Does Tainis include the nighttime or only begins with daybreak? I wouldn't even go near that question. You know, there are tons of shiurim on that topic of whether the nighttime is included in the tainus. Okay. Now, where are we up to? Oh. Okay, so what happened before the great miracle of Hanukkah? What led up to the great miracle? So the Raisa says the following. Shenichnesu Yevonim leHeichal, Timu Kol Hashmanim Shebeheichal. Okay, now we have to spend a little bit of time on this statement. Just first, we'll translate it. So it's the Greeks go into the sanctuary, the Heichal. That's where the Holy of Holies is. That's where the Menorah is, and that's where the Mizbeach HaPnimi is. And Timu Kol Hashmanim. And they contaminated all the oils. Here I want to ask you the following question. I understand that timu means, in English, they contaminate. But as I always claim, that when you translate Lashon Kodesh into English, it's very hard to get it right. Translate everything, a lot of things lose the meaning in translation. What does the word timu mean? And I could break down that question into many different parts and many different paragraphs. The first paragraph is the following. Is it active or passive. I'll explain. Were the Yevanim interested in a campaign? This was part of their campaign to undermine the Jewish religion, to actively contaminate the Shmanim. Was that part of their agenda? Or Timukol Shmanim means they contaminated, not because they actively, deliberately did such a thing. It wasn't part of their agenda or their campaign. But it happened. Why? Because they entered into the Heichal. Then we have to answer, that's going to be the second paragraph. So what if they entered into the Heichal? Why does entering into the Heichal make all the Shmanim Tameh? So again, the first way of understanding it, which I'm going to try to prove to you, if I'm reading the Rambam correctly, is the Rambam's way of understanding it. This was part of their entire enterprise. Most of the Rishonim are not going to learn this way. Tosus is going to try to rack his brains and figure, why do we assume that all the Shmanim were Tameh? He doesn't work with the premise that the Yevanim, this was part of their deliberate agenda to actively go ahead and be Metameh. But the Rambam, take a look, the Rambam says that what were the Yevanim interested in? Listen carefully. Number one, Gazru Gzeros al Yisrael. Again, we're going to have to spend a lot of time on that phrase. What does it mean, Gazru Gzeros al Yisrael? Batlu Dasam. They undermined their religion. How is that different than Gzeros al Yisrael? And then they attacked, number one, Talmud Torah, Esek HaTorah. The Rambam says, Lo nichu osam lasol k'Torah. This is obviously an active agenda. This is a deliberate agenda of the Yevanim. Uve mitzvos. And some say that the Rambam in the word mitzvos has in mind bris milah. There's no indication that the Rambam has in mind bris milah. It seems that they were trying to underline all forms of kiyum mitzvos. Then he goes on. Upashtu yadam bimamonam. They went ahead and they absconded, I'm looking for the word in English, with the possessions of the Jewish people, right? Looted. I guess you'd say if you're from the 20th century, you know what I mean by looted, right? Ubibnosehem. And they violated the Jewish girls. This has to do with the sugya mesechtik subis of Yibayel Lehegmon Tchila, that whole sugya about why they established that a girl who's getting married for the first time should get married on certain days, and it's all in order to try to avoid the hegmon. And who is this hegmon historically? The Ran already in the beginning subis says the hegmon was the Yevanim, and that's Bibno Sehem. And again, you and I might see this as sexual immorality, but it's much, much more profound than that. This agenda of Bibnoseim has to do with the very antithetical philosophy of the intolerance of the Yevanim for Kedusha, of what's called sanctity. Again, that's a long discussion if we have time. I'm just wondering if you guys are interested after we finish the Sugya of Chanukah and having one or two shirim on a philosophical level. That's up to you. And if we do, if you vote in that favor, because that wasn't part of the original survey, then remind me to talk about the word ubibnoseim in the Rambam. And then he says, v'nichnesu leheichal, they went into the heichal, upartzu bo protos, they were porates into the heichal to vilify the heichal and all that was sanctified in the heichal, v'timu es hataros, v'timu hataros. Is it active? Is it deliberate? Yes, it's part of an agenda. The other Rishonim, I'm going to try to figure out, what does it mean, Timu Kol Hashmonim? They don't have this idea that the Rambam has, that the Yevanim were interested in being Metame the Shemen. And this leads us to the question of what the status of a Goy is as far as Tuma Vitara. Meaning, does a Goy have the status of a Tameh such that he transfers Tumah, contamination, to anything that he touches, anything he comes in contact with? Now, Rabosai, there are a lot of laws of Tumah Vitara here that would require a lot more knowledge than I can claim, you know, to give you. But if you don't mind, I'm going to just you know, touch on, it's not even the tip of the iceberg, of something that's called Tumas Heset. Okay? Hey Yud Samach Tes. Now, Tumas Heset applies in the case of a Zav. Okay? and there are a couple other cases, Zav Zava. And Tumas Hesed is a very unique kind of tumah, and it applies whenever you cause something to move from the spot. So let me see if I can give you a little demonstration. Let's see if this will work. I don't know if this is going to work. We'll try it. Here, watch.
This is a magic trick.
What?
Is it a magic trick?
No, it's not magic. Here, watch what happens. Okay? Wait, I need a third coin. Otherwise, the magic won't work. All right, let's see. All right, I only find a shekel, but that should be good enough. Now, watch what happens. If these two coins are near each other, right? And I take this coin, I put my finger on the victim, so to speak. Watch what happens. Let's see if I'm... I hope this works. Okay? You see that? Anybody know what that's called? I mean, again, I'm when it comes to science, I'm a total amoralist. But anybody know what that's called? Kinetic energy. Have you ever heard of it?
Yeah.
Okay. So that's what Tumas Hesed is about. Now watch what happens in Tumas Hesed. This coin is Tomei. Let's say it came in contact with a Mitzorah or a Zav, right? And did it touch this coin? There was never contact with this coin. But it caused the coin to move. That's called Tumas Hesed.
So,
and that's the most extreme kind of Tumas Hesed, where there was absolutely no contact. So there's no Tumas Maga, it's called Tumas Hesed. And that applies to his Zav.
So it would also apply, rather, I mean, here you have three coins, so theoretically, they transfer the tumor from one to the next. When you say something that puts something in between that's not Tommy, like
right.
A wooden,
let's say
a
this
nickel.
Were, yeah, let's say it was a Kli Eitz, for example. Okay. It would still be Matami, even okay. though this Kli remains
the energy
remains tall. And that's called Tumas Hesed. Oh. Now, why is that relevant to this whole sugya? Because if the Yevanim entered into the Heichal, and whatever they did in the Heichal, according to all the other Rishonim, you know, in other words, they weren't, like in the Rambam, they didn't have a practice, they didn't, it wasn't part of their policy, you know, to dig up all the Shmonim. But since they wanted to enter into the Heichal, then we might have a problem of Tumas Hesed. What I mean is that if they moved around the Shmonim, then the Shmonim becomes Tomei, but that's only in the case of a Zav. Oh, so now the question is, do the Yevanim have the status of a Tumas Zav? So technically, according to Torah law, only a Jew can incur, what's the word I'm looking for, can receive Tumas Zav. But there's an entire sugya, and I'll tell you in a minute where it is, of a Gzeres Chachamim, that the Chachamim made a Gzera, and they instituted Tumas Zav for Goyim. That's all Drabonim. And if that be the case, then a Goy is Metame B'Tumas Zav. What's unclear is exactly in history, when did that take place? When did the guy have the status of a Zav? So for example, if you look here in Tosfos, Dibra Maskel Shahoya, he quotes a Gemara in Nida. Do you see that? It's the last Tosfos on your page. And the Gemara in Nida says, Gozru al anachrim lios kizavim. Do you see that? Kizavim. Can you underline those words? Because that's critical. Now, Tosis is going to vacillate back and forth as to whether or not that gzera that set up the status in Goyim as Zavim, did that gzera predate the miracle, the Yevanim, the period of the Yevanim, or did it happen later? Well, what's the import of this discussion? It's not just a historical question, it's a halachic question. Why? Because let's go through the two possibilities. Let's assume that a guy is not Metame Bezov. If a guy is not Metame Bezov, then he's only Metame B'maga. If he's only Metame B'maga, then if they discovered one Pach Shemen, or for that matter many Pachim of Shemen, that were absolutely sealed, in such a way that it would be impossible to touch the shemen without breaking the seal, and the seal is now closed, that would indicate that the shemen inside is tall. But let me ask you a different question. If we're talking not about tumas mago, but about tumas hesed, which means that even though there was no contact between the goy and the shemen, but even if he just moved the pashal shemen, that itself would be enough to be metami the shemen. So Tosis wants to suggest that perhaps we could say that the gzera of nachrim, that the metami betumas zav, predated the yavanim. Now, in a sense, that's good news. Why, so to speak, it's good news because that would explain why we have to assume that all the shmonim are tamei. But the bad news is, what about that single pach that was sealed in the chosam of the Kohen Gadol? How do we know that it wasn't moved from place to place, and therefore even the shemen inside of it would have received the tuma of zav, which is called tumas hesed? And you know, the Rishonim are so bothered by this question that some of them want to say that the Pach Shemen was made of a Kli Eitz, and a Kli Eitz is not Makar. Even that's very questionable, because if we're talking about Tumas Hesed, Kli Eitz is not going to help you over here. So the Rishonim go this far. I just want you to realize how far the Rishonim went. Where did they find this Pach Shemen? It was dug up under the ground. In other words, the Pach HaShemen was deliberately buried below the surface of the earth in such a way that it was absolutely clear that the Chosam on the earth itself, watch this, we assume, if I were to ask you, where was the Chosam of the Kohen Gadol, where was the seal, what would you answer? It was on the flask, is that how you say it in English? On the Pach HaShemen. Name, the Chosam was on the ground. They actually did, I don't know what you'd call it in English, an impression on the ground, and the Pach Shemen was buried below the ground. What is the Chosam on the ground itself prove to me?
They didn't move it.
That they never moved it, and therefore there was never Tumas Hesed. So if you look again at Tosis says the following. He says, Im kvar gozru ala nachrim lios kizavim. He doesn't know whether that's the case, because historically we're not sure. Tzarch lomar, shoya munach b'chosem b'karka. There was a chosem in the karka itself, shlo hisitu b'kli. That there was never a tumas hesed. That's how far Tosis wants to go. But it's clear from Tosis that, you know, the problem here is that the Yevonim nichnasu lehechal, and once they were nichnas lehechal, then it's very possible that they came in contact with, or at least moved, all the shmonim. So the Rishonim here ask another question. This is not in Tosis, this is in other Rishonim. They want to know, why does it say timu kol shmonim? Do we know for sure that they were mitami all the shmonim? According to the Rambam, that's not a kasha, because that was exactly their agenda, that was their program. But according to the other Rishonim, it just means that inadvertently, while they're, you know, trompsing through the Heichal, so that's only a suffix. And this leads us to another question. Why is it that Bechlal HaKadosh Baruch Hu was worried about the Tumas HaShmonim here, and therefore he had to bring about a miracle that they found this Pach Shemen? Why couldn't they use the Shmonim even if they were Tameh? Because of Tumah Hutra B'Tzibur. Tumah Hutra B'Tzibur. So just let me see if I can find this inside. Give me a second here. Oh. The one who asks this question is the Pnei Yoshua. Maduah Yitzrichim Lines, Bechdei Shielem Shemintar, Reyesh Din, She'im Kol Atzibur Tmeim, is Tumah Hutra B'Tzibur. Vim Kane. Now, just before we see the answer to this question, let's be careful and meticulous about reading the Braisa. The Braisa says that Badku, do you see the word Badku in the second of the wide lines? What does the word Badku mean?
the search.
Right, but what's the thrust of it? I don't mean the literal translation. What do you learn from the word badku? What conclusion can you derive from the word badku? What were they... What were they looking for? What were they motivating? You know, you don't do a bdika unless, right, if you're Sherlock Holmes, you know, you do an investigation because you want to find out who's guilty of the crime, right? So what were they looking
for? Because futur et sibur is only if you don't have something. They have
So you're a step ahead of me. But I'm asking again, if you can, if you don't mind, I should just answer this question. What were they looking for? Badku. It says that they were actively involved in badku.
They knew one was hidden.
No. Again, what were they looking for? You don't have to... I don't know if they knew anything, but Bodku, what were they looking for? Shemen?
Tar.
Oh, comes along the Pnei Yoshua. And now, Asher, you can give your answer if you like. And he asked a fine question. Why were they searching for Shemen Tar? They didn't... There was no reason, halachically, that they would have to search for Shemen Tar. They could have used Shemen Tar, man. And that's based on the principle of Tumah Hutchim and Tzibur. Yeah, Asher, what were you saying before?
So I was saying, but... True, Tumah Hutchim and Tzibur, but... If you have an ability to do something that's not tummy, if you have that, you have to definitely have to, even though you have too much of a sequel, if you have the opportunity to do it that's not tummy.
So again, the Pnei Yeshua is assuming the following. Number one, Timu Kol Ashmani, whether you take it the Rambam's way or you take it the other Rishonim, what exactly was the Tumah? Was it a Tumas Maga, Tumas Hesed, so forth and so on. In such a case of Timu Kol Ashmanim, you don't go around looking for Shemen Tar. The halacha says at that point, light the candles with Shemen Tomei. Says the Pnei Yoshua, Be'emes, in truth, Hayu Lahem Lahadlik B'Shemen Tomei. That's what they could have done. Elo, listen carefully. Now the Pnei Yoshua waxes very, very dramatic, very philosophical. He says, "Kidei laharos eschibatam lifnei Hakadosh Baruch Hu." In other words, they believed that the success in overcoming the Yevanim was due to the chibah of Klal Yisrael, the love of Klal Yisrael in the eyes of the Ribono Shalom. So they knew that in the context of that chibah, Hashem would do a miracle, meaning. The whole story of Hanukkah is a story of miracle, and that's Chiba Lefnei HaMakom. Now, when I read this Pnei Yoshua, I thought of the very famous answer to the following question: why is it that in Hanukkah we find Mahadrin, and Mahadrin Minah Mahadrin, we don't find it in any other mitzvah? The answer is because the whole Nes came about because they were Mahadrin. You know, it's because they wanted to demonstrate the Chiba of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's why the Nes came about. Hashem said, if you're looking for Shemen Tahar, because you want to show that the love and how much we are cherished in the eyes of God, then I'm going to do you a Nes. So therefore the whole miracle itself comes about through Hidu, meaning according to the strict letter of the law, they could have lit with Shemen Tahar. However, not everyone agrees with this. And many Achronim say that the halach of Tumah Hutchim et Tzibur does not apply here at all. Why? Because if we assume that the gzera on the goyim to make them into zavim came into existence before the miracle, then there's no din of Tumah Hutchim et Tzibur with regard to Tumah Zav. Because this is a sugya in Masechta Nida, that Tumah Hutchim et Tzibur only applies to Tumas Mes, but not to Tumas Zav. So now the question is the following. If you can assume that the contamination of the Shmonim on the part of the Yevanim was because the Yevanim were Tumi Tumas Mes, the Gemara always assumes that Goyim, especially if they're involved in a battle, in a war, like the Yevanim, they come in contact with the dead, then you could talk about Tumas Mes. The Brice itself doesn't specify exactly what Tumah the Yevanim had and they transferred over to the Shmonim. If you assume that it was Tumah Ziva, then there's no din of Tumah Hutchim et Tzibur. And therefore they had to bring Shemen Tov. Yes, please.
I always thought that when they go into the temple, they found that all the jars of oil had been broken open, and they only found one jar that had not been broken open. Now, if that's the case, and all the jars have been broken open, you don't even need to come onto this special type of tumour. It was just that they obviously touched the oil, and it was tumour.
Okay.
Am I wrong in that?
I think the Rambam would definitely agree with you. The Rambam would say that they went out of their way to break open all the jars of oil. That was part of their propaganda, so to speak. Right. And they had direct contact with the oil.
So,
and if that be the case,
we don't have to come onto this whole special type of tumour.
Well, that's for sure. The Rambam would not even have asked this question. What was the issue here? But what I'm asking is, even according to the Rambam, why were they searching? That's the Brisa goes out of its way to say Badku. They were looking actively to find Shem and Tar. What about Tumah Hutshubitzibu? And here's where the other Rishonim, other than the Rambam, who assumed that there was no propaganda, there was no deliberate attempt on the part of the Yavonim Dafka to be Mitami the Shmonim, then the possibility exists that the Tumah of the Shmonim was a result of what we call Tumas Hesed, because they had the status of Zavim, and now we can answer the question that there's no possibility of activating the principle of Tumah Hojim Tzibur, which doesn't apply to Tumas Ziva. That's what I meant to say. Now here we have another question. In order to be Makayan, the mitzvah of Hadlokas HaMenorah, right, and that's the next part of the Braisa, that after they found the Shmonim, after they found this Pach Shemen, it says Hidliku Bo, and Hidliku Bimenu Shmonas Yomim, that was a great miracle. So you need not just Shemen Tor, what else has to be Tor? Anybody know? The menorah itself. And here's where the Rishonim ask, Ketzad, how is it possible, Shalom Nitma HaMenorah? In other words, maybe you could tell me they found the Pach Shemen that was Tar, and the Shemen is Tar, but the menorah for sure is Tameh. And Lomi Boy, according to the Rambam, who says that this was part of their active, you know, propaganda, but even if you don't know like the Rambam, the Yesh Lan Niach, it seems that we have to assume that there was Tumah in the menorah. So again, there are a bunch of answers to this question. Many of them go beyond beyond, let's say, you know, our understanding. I just mentioned to you, I mean, you really have to know a great deal of Tumah V'Tara for this. One of the Rishonim called the Ra'em, he claims that they were able to light the menorah with a stick that was made of wood, and wood is not Makabel Tumah. But there's another answer that I wanted to share with you. And this is the Marsha's answer. He says the following. All right, this is too complicated. But I'm going to drop the Marsha here. This would take me hours to figure out what he means. But leaving out the Marsha, what I did find that it's very interesting is the following. That even if you accept the Ra'im that we mentioned before, that they lit the menorah with an Eitz Aroch, right?
Yeah. That doesn't help you.
Well, why does it help you?
Because the menorah itself, say menorah itself is Tommy, what's the point? I mean,
Do you know what sugya, you know, I don't know how much kachim you've learned, but there's a famous sugya that touches on this issue. We touched on it in Zvachim when we learned Zvachim. It's called Dichu. Let me explain. Let's say I shecht a karbon, if I'm a kohen, let's say I did the shechita, if it's a karbon ol, it's in the azor, whatever it might be, right, batzofon. And at that moment, when I shechted the karbon, the mizbeach was pogum. That means, that, let's say one of the avnei mizbeach fell off, and the mizbeach is not whole. So the law is that that karbon becomes dochli, which means that even after we fix up the mizbeach, you can't bring that karbon. So the Bach asks this question, the Marsha tries to answer it, that if the menorah was tamei, then it has the same status as a mizbeach pogum, and therefore the shemen would be dochli. And what that means is that regardless of whether the shemen is tar or tamei, you can't use that shemen. So the shemen that was in the pach of the Kohen Gadol becomes dochui, and even when we fix up the menorah through a process of being matar the menorah, that shemen is completely excluded, meaning we have to go out and make new shemen, just like in the case of a carbon. Once the carbon is dochui, you're going to have to replace it with a different carbon, and this carbon goes to the Beis HaDeshen. You know, you could just get rid of it. And the Marsha wants to say, again, this part of the Marsha, I think maybe I can understand, that the halacha of Pagimas HaMizbeach has no parallel with regard to the menorah. And he says the reason for that is because Shemen is only a vehicle to create a Shalheves. Do you remember? I don't know. This might have been in my 1145 show, but we discussed that Shemen Shel Sreifa and why you could use it for Ner Chanukah, because we said that the Shemen is only a vehicle to create the Shalheves. The Shalheves itself is not Makabel Tumah. The flame itself is not Makabel Tumah. It's a Dover Shembo Mamish. But the question is, do we apply the Din of Dichli to the Shemen? So in the case of Karban, the Kiyum is in the Karban itself. And that Karban became Dachlui once the Mizbeach was Pogum. But in the case of Shemen, you don't apply the principle of Dachlui because the Shemen itself is only a conduit, so to speak, to create the Shalheves. Again, this is all very profound, Kachim and so forth and so on.
How does it help if we say the menorah also itself was wood?
That could help. Correct. So the truth is that at some point in history, during the Bayis Sheni period, the menorah was wood.
I think the Sforna brings that down. Because they actually moved the menorah to outside in right. This case, and it was they when they either they made it out of wood, whatever they.
The Gemara says that the reason why they made the menorah out of wood is because Chas Rachmana Mamonim Shel Yisrael. This is a period of poverty in Jewish history. I told you before that Bayis Sheni is a very bleak period in Jewish history. Does anybody know why we recite Atachon Antonu in Ma'ariv HaMotzi Shabbos? After all, you can make Abdol on a Kos. Why they institute another Avdola in davening? So Gemara says in Tainis, because during Bayis Sheni they were so poor they couldn't afford a cup of wine. Again, why they didn't use apple juice or orange juice, I don't know. You know, some people use Coca-Cola. I don't know if anyone uses whiskey. I don't know. That I didn't hear yet. But I'm sure that'll come up. Right. So the Gemara says that that's why they instituted another Havdalah for those people who couldn't make Havdalah al kos. They simply couldn't afford a cup of wine. Okay. Now it says Kishigavru Malchus Beis Chashmonai V'Nitzchum. Okay. When was the Nitzachon? Okay. Does the Brisa spell it out? It just says, Kishigavra Malchus Beis Chashmonai V'Nitzchum, and then it goes through the whole story of how they were able to light the menorah. And then the Nes happened and it lasted for 8 days. But on what day did that V'Nitzchum actually occur? So if you take a look at the Rambam says that on the 25th of the month of Kislev, Gavru Yisrael Aloiveya. What question should we ask then? On the 26th. The first day of Hanukkah should be on the 26th, because the battle ended on the 25th. And this question really bothers the mind of so many of the Achronim because of another element in the equation. And that is that it would seem that if they only defeated the Avadim on the 25th, then what would have been the earliest date that they could have lit the menorah?
Next day.
The 26th, correct? Because on the 25th they were cleaning up the mess, if you know what I mean, and then they found the Pach Shemen. That night they would have lit the menorah. Right? There's a mitzvah of Hadlakas, the menorah of Belilah. Again, we'll soon see there's a shear of oil. The question is how large was this Pach HaShemen? That's a whole different discussion. But if the first time that they lit the Hadlaka was on the 26th, because on the 25th they defeated the Yevanim and then found the oil, then the first day of the miracle was on the 26th of Kislev. And this bothers the mind of a lot of Rishonim. and they come to the conclusion that the Rambam is wrong, and the Meiri says that they won the battle on the 24th of Kislev, not the way the Rambam has it, and therefore they lit the menorah on the night of the 25th when they found the Pach Hashem, and that's why we start commemorating the miracle on the 25th of Kislev. So the Ar Gadol, I think he lived about 150 years ago, if I'm not mistaken, he wants to defend the Rambam, and he says that the Rambam has a unique shita regarding Hadlokas HaMenorah. And according to the Rambam, the mitzvah of Hadlokas HaMenorah applies in the morning as well. In other words, the Rambam really should count the mitzvah menorah as two mitzvahs in Taryah. Again, there's a whole discussion why he doesn't do so, but logically, the Rambam holds there are two mitzvahs of Hadlaka. There's one Hadlaka at night, and then there's another Hadlaka in the morning. The Rashba is very upset with this Rambam. He holds there's only a mitzvah of Hadlaka at night, and if we light the menorah in the morning, that's only if let's say it goes out, and that's called Hatavas Haneris. That's a different concept. So the Ar Gadol wants to say that the Rambam l'shitaso, he can consistently explain and justify why the miracle took place on the 25th, not at night, but by day. So let's say, for example, with daybreak, the war ended, so to speak, and they conquered the Yevonim, and on that very day they found the Pach Hashem, and then they were obligated on the 25th itself to light the menorah, so the Ness began on the 25th. It's a little bit strange, because then it comes out that for 7 out of 8 days there was a miracle that it lasted for 24 hours. You know, each day was a miracle for that day. According to the Rambam Shita, the way the Ar Gadol understands it, there's 1 out of the 8 days that the miracle only lasted for 12 hours maximum, if you follow what I mean. But in any event, there was a miracle of Hadlaka.
It was a miracle finding it in the first place.
Right. But again, you know, we're going to have tomorrow, Mr. Shem, we're going to talk about why they established the first day of Hanukkah as part of the 8 days, because in fact they had a Pach Shem that would have lasted based on the natural law for 1 day, so that wasn't a miracle. So hopefully tomorrow we'll have like 5 different answers to that question, maybe more. But be that as it may, that's how I want to conclude. Says the Ar Gadol, Kasher Nitzchu B'Chafhei, according to the Rambam, they won the battle on the 25th. Nichnasu L'Migdash, they found the Pach HaShemen, B'Chos Moshal Kol Gadol, B'Dliku Es HaMenorah. Why? Because according to the Rambam, Yesh Chovah Es Hadlaka Shel Boker. And therefore, Osim Zechel Enes Shmonas Yomim, on Chafhei itself, the first of the 8 days, even for the Hadlaka of Yom Chafei, even though there was no Hadlaka of Leil Chafei. But the Meiri says no, that the Nitzachim was on the 24th of Kislev, and on the 25th, starting with the night going into the 25th, they lit the menorah, they found the pot, and they lit the menorah. Okay then? So that's what we can, that's a good place to stop. Okay, and tomorrow, believe me, why there are 8 days of Hanukkah when the miracle really was only 7 days. I wish everyone a great day.
So, in terms of fasting on the outside, so every member of my family that the Yortzites, they all came out, all the Nifta on the day that's impossible to fast.
They all what?
And all the Nifta on a day that's impossible.
Oh, I see.
My father was Yud Bey's other. My father-in-law was Rosh Chodesh. My mother was Rosh Chodesh.
That was itself a mess.
Yeah, so
you know, one of the most profound sugyas.
My grandfather was the ninth of Teves. So it's like every one of them, even if I wanted to hold the Shita that I should fast, everyone that I would fast for, I can't. And it's impossible. So who knows what that means. But
you mentioned Rosh Chodesh, because one of the profound sugyas, I don't know if we'll get a chance to discuss it, is how to compare Rosh Chodesh and Chanukah as far as Isra Hesped and Tainus is concerned.
Yeah, because it
could be that Rosh Chodesh in terms of Isra Hesped and Tainus has a much more severe Isra than Chanukah.
So,